Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the news and stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students' Director of Policy and Public Affairs, Ron Matus, speaks to new Florida Board of Education Chair, Andy Tuck. When it comes to choice in public education, Tuck is an all-of-the-above kind of guy. His wife teaches in and his children attended district schools. But Tuck doesn't think it makes sense to limit educational choice to district options. He says giving more parents access to more options, like charters, scholarships, and educational savings accounts, is critical. This interview took place in person on Friday, July 26, 2019. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the interview.
Chair Tuck, thank you so much for taking some time out for us. You're the new guy, you're the new chair on the State Board of Education, and I think it'd be really neat if people got to learn a little bit more about you and what your views are on education. I wanted to start off with just a basic question, which is why you got into this space. So before you were appointed to the board by Governor Scott 5 years ago, you were a county school board member. Do I got that right?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
And so what made you, what steered you in that direction? I mean, why did you decide to get involved with public education?
Well, I will correct you just a little bit to start with. I'm actually the senior board member on the state board. My other board members remind me of that, like if I'm the oldest guy or something, but I'm the one that's been on there the longest, Marva Johnson. She was 1 month after I got on is when she came on, and all the rest of them are behind us. But anyways, I find that kind of interesting. That's the only time I've ever been the senior of anything. So well, just to kind of give you a little history on myself, I grew up in Lake Placid, and my mother was a legal secretary, and my dad was a sheriff's deputy. They divorced back in when I was about 6 years old, and so money was tight. I mean, we were definitely a middle class family, to say the best. We free and reduced lunch, my sister and I both, all of our growing up life, and we even stood in line for commodities at one time or another growing up. So education was the way that we saw to be able to better our lives. My grandfather was adamant about you're going to get an education if it kills all of us, as well as my parents were. So I ended up being the first in my family to graduate from college, which we'll talk about that a little bit later, because I firmly believe that a first generation college graduate is key for every family. Mm-hmm. But what really got me interested in education is when I was a senior in high school, some friends of my family's offered to put me through college, basically pay for what I didn't get grants or whatever. You know, they picked up the tab. And when I went back to pay them back for that, their response was, "You don't owe us anything, but you do owe others going forward. You have to figure it, you know, we'll let you figure that out." And you know, it's kind of hard to pay for somebody's college education, so I looked for ways that I could give back, and a school board seat came up in 2006 that I decided to run for, and was successful running, and felt like we did some good things from 2006 until 2014. Governor Scott asked if I would serve on the State Board of Education. And as most of your listeners know, and you probably well know, the county school board pays a fairly decent salary of anywhere from $20,000 to $40,000 a year if you sit on the local school board. When you leave that and go to the state board, it doesn't pay anything. So I had to take that into consideration, but I knew the reason I was doing all of this education stuff was to pay back what was given to me earlier in life, and so I knew that I could impact more students, more people on a state level than I could on a on the county level, so I resigned from the county board and took a seat on the state board. So that's kind of the background as to why I'm in education. On a personal level, my wife has been a seventh grade language arts teacher for, I think, going on 28 years now. And so I'm a business owner in a rural county, and my children went to public schools, and we're kind of all in on the education thing. I think it's the most important part of a person's life, of getting to where they want to go.
Well, as you know, our blog has a lot to do with educational choice. Mm-hmm. And all forms of it. We just don't write about the scholarship programs. We write about and certainly support, you know, choice in all its forms. I actually don't know this about you, but I'm assuming you're a school choice, educational choice guy too. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And is that across the board? I mean, is that non-district options and district options?
Across the board. I truly believe that nobody knows best for their child's needs than parents.
Okay.
And my sister, when she was in middle school, my mother made the choice to send her to a private Christian school in Lake Placid, and that was good for her. She needed what that did for her, and that was, you know, 30 plus years ago. And I felt like, my mother made the right decision. My sister's got three little boys, and they all go to a charter school in Tampa.
Interesting.
You know, and are thriving. They're doing great where they weren't doing as well in a traditional public school. Not that it was the public school's problem, but it's just been better for them to go to the charter school that they go to. When I was on the board here in Highlands County, we put an international baccalaureate program in place at Sebring High School, which at the time was the only rural county in the state that had one. And that I felt like that was a choice that my daughter and both my children could take advantage of. And my daughter did great in that as well. But I look at online classes, part of virtual school, any of these things as options that students and parents have. So I don't think we can have enough of them.
Well, dovetails into my next question, and maybe you answered my next question, which is, why you're a school choice guy? I've been at Step Up for 7 years, and before that, for 8 years, I was an education reporter. Mm-hmm. And, I have learned through all that time that there are lots of reasons why people gravitate towards an appreciation of choice, and it can be many different reasons from all across the ideological spectrum. I mean, you describe this in very practical terms. It's whatever is the best fit. But is there any other reasons for it? I mean, I know some people stress competition. Other people stress opportunity in terms of why they embrace choice. Any of those things come into the mix,
well,
too?
Well, I believe in every aspect of life, competition is good. For everybody, for everything. I think competition is good. I think having options, just in general, having options that people can choose from is critical. And I think that parents want what's best for their children. I know my parents did. I know I wanted what was best for my students. I feel like my children got a first-class education at Sebring High School. And I could have sent them to Heartland Christian or wherever. We had the means to do that, but I didn't feel like I needed to. If I felt like I needed to, I would have done that.
Right.
So our choice was to leave our children in the traditional public school. But don't think for a minute that I wouldn't have had a different choice had I needed to. I know that being on the Highlands County Board, there were many times that people would come, parents would come and want to waiver their students into another school that they weren't zoned for in the district for whatever reason. Anytime they did that, I voted in favor of letting them waiver in because I felt like they knew what was best for their student. And it didn't matter, you know, if we didn't have the capacity, then as far as I'm concerned, you can open up another classroom, you can hire another teacher, whatever you need to do. But that was what was best for those students, what their parents decided for them. Okay. So.
I think you know as well as any of us that educational choice is often portrayed, you know, by people who are critical of it or by the press as a conservative thing, you know, a Republican thing, more of a right-wing thing. Is it? Do you view it that way?
You know, I know as many Democrats as I do Republicans that are school choice advocates, and I've always looked at it as a nonpartisan thing because in the end of the day, I don't know anybody that doesn't want what's best for students. I don't view it as a conservative issue. I view it as a nonpartisan what's best for students. I mean, all of us, if you're not in this business to do what's best for students, you need to get out of it. And I don't know how that comes across, but it just does.
Okay. Have your views on educational choice evolved over time? I mean, you described.
No, I can answer that. No. I mean, like I said, my sister went to private school. I went to public school all my life. My sister went to private school when she was in middle school. That was what was best for her.
So you knew even back then that having options was
that was before charter schools ever came along. I'm options is what's best.
Okay. So. How about your time on the school board locally? Did that experience shape your thinking about, you know, what the best things are for public education and, you know, whether we need to have more options or?
Well, I John Hage is a friend of mine, and I'm always on him about why we can't have more options in rural counties. And I understand there's funding, financially, there's some barriers there that we may have a problem with. But I think we're working that way. And there's other options other than traditional bricks and mortar charter schools with online classes and virtual schools. And I think that just opens up a whole array of options with online classes. My children both, I mean, my daughter's graduated now, but my son takes online classes even in college and did when he was in high school. Mm-hmm. I think one even took PE online at one time. I don't know how that happened, but that's what they did. So, I think we need to continue to expand options from here on out. I don't think that's something that we ever need to stop.
Okay. There is this narrative out there. I'm glad you touched on the, you know, choice in rural areas, because there is this narrative out there that choice can't work in rural areas. I mean, ever since I've been at Step Up, I've seen that kind of story pop up over and over again. And I look around Florida, and there's some places that I think people would see as pretty remote that have charter schools or mm-hmm. that have private schools that accept a good number of scholarship kids. So it doesn't, when I hear that storyline, it doesn't really jive with what I see on the ground in Florida, but I was curious what your take is on it. I mean, can choice work in rural areas? Is there an appetite for it? Are there enough things in place to make it happen?
I think that we need to educate folks a little more on what choice really is in rural districts. There's a lot of, you mentioned remote areas. Glades County has a very successful charter school there that actually had Joy Prescott was the Florida Teacher of the Year last year that taught
the Seminole Indian charter?
The Seminole Indian charter school. It's a very successful charter school. So, Jefferson County now, the entire district is a charter district and has thrived. I mean, they've gone from a traditional DF district to be, and I think they're a C and maybe even a B in 1 or 2 years. I can't remember exactly, but they're very successful.
Apalachicola, of all places, has a very successful charter school.
Exactly. I do think there's some education that needs to take place on what exactly, when we talk about choice, what choice is in the rural counties. There's a lot of tradition that goes on with families that have been here forever, that my son's going to go to Seaborn High School, and my grandfather went to Seaborn High School, I went there, my son's going to go there. And so a lot of that happens in the rural counties, and so they look at maybe as a charter school coming in and being something that would be disruptive to a rural area, I think. But we have very successful private schools here, with Heartland Christian, which you visited, Cornerstone Academy in Avon Park is very successful.
I was looking up some numbers before we came over, and I think in Highlands, between the different scholarship programs, there's about 700 kids on either Florida Tax Credit or McKay or Gardner. Mm-hmm. You know, a district with 12,000 kids, that's a pretty substantial number.
Sure.
Is there tensions about that? I mean, is that something that people have accepted here, or is there?
I don't know that we have any tensions about that. I think for the most part, people want what's best for students. I think you will have upper level leadership in districts that will have an issue with money being diverted, but they just have to get over that.
Okay. Can I switch gears on you?
Yes, sir.
About something other than choice.
Sure.
So, obviously, teacher pay, teacher compensation—that's been big issue forever. It seems like it's maybe even at a higher level with more attention in the past few years. And Commissioner Corcoran at the last board meeting said something I thought was very interesting. He said, quote, "teacher compensation is going to be a huge component of the agenda going forward," end quote. I wasn't at the meeting. I don't know if he elaborated on that, but I was wondering, is there anything more you can tell us at this point? Is it too early? I'm just curious, is that more bonuses, or is that something that would affect actual salaries? Where are we headed?
We really haven't gotten that far yet.
Okay.
You probably know as much as I do at this point. So,
Well, do you see teacher pay in Florida as being a big issue?
I think we should be looking at it, and we could be looking at it as making it better. I have to say that because my wife is eventually going to listen to this podcast. So, but no, I think if we're going to have a world class, we have a world class education system here, and we're going to need to show that in our compensation. But I do think it is going to have to be measured. It's not. I personally don't believe in across the board raises for everybody. I think to some extent you can do that, but great teachers need to be paid great salaries, and that's something I've always felt, something I've always believed in. And
in Florida, we're not there yet.
I think it needs to be better. I think we need better teachers' salaries. Sure.
Okay.
And I feel like everybody on our board feels that way, and the administration obviously feels that way because they're making efforts to get there. So.
Okay. If I could ask you a big picture question and a perception question. I've been in Florida my whole life. I'm a proud Floridian. 20 years ago, I think I and a lot of people would have not been thrilled with the state of our public schools, the state of our public education system. Just about every indicator you looked at, Florida would not have been a shining example, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we were lagging in just about everything. And one of the things I did as a reporter and continue to do is do my best to look at the trend lines for the academic outcomes. And I personally think it's night and day between 20 years ago and now, whether you're looking at test scores or AP results or grad rates or kids going on to college and persisting in college. I think just about all the indicators look much better today than they did 20 years ago. And yet, I don't think that's the perception. It's certainly not the narrative that you see in a lot of the media stories. And I'm curious what your take is on why there seems to be a disconnect between the progress we've made as a state in public education and the storyline.
Well, I think that is ginned up a lot by the press, and one of the things that really aggravates me is when I see that we're 46th in the nation in school spending. I really don't care what we've spent. I'm looking at something that says we're number 5 in return on investment.
Right.
So does that mean we're not spending enough, or does that mean we're managing the money that we're spending better than 45 other states in the country? Our graduation rate's gone from 52% to 86%. That's a phenomenal number.
In 20 years.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. There's 1,000 people a day coming to Florida. A lot of those people are putting their kids into public schools. Obviously, they see something that they like because they're not going to North Dakota or wherever. They're coming to Florida. So I think it's more of a press issue than the factual issue.
Going back to what you were saying about the difference between where we rank in spending and where we rank on some of these outcomes and where we rank on return on investment, I think people have bought into the idea that it's all about the money. And then if you're not spending enough, you're getting lower quality. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a disconnect between what we spend relative to other states and what our academic performance is relative to other states. Yeah, we don't spend much relative to other states, but we're getting pretty good outcomes.
I don't really know how to answer that, because we always hear, it seems like every meeting we go to, we hear how we're down at the bottom in teacher salaries and spending and whatnot. But again, I look at the results and I'm interested in what we're doing, not what it's costing. I mean, because we're investing into our future, and we're obviously getting the return on investment. So I hope that answers your question. But
you're going to ignore the narrative and keep focusing on the outcomes.
I've always ignored the narrative. Yeah.
Okay. Well, one last thing, if I can go back to the choice thing.
Sure.
Real quick. So one of the things that you hear a lot when people are talking about choice programs, particularly non-district choice programs and particularly scholarship programs, is that there's no accountability, or there's not enough accountability, or there's little accountability. And I think many of us feel like accountability is more complicated than the critics portray it as, that it's not just about regulations, it's also about the accountability that comes from parents choosing and having the power to choose. How do you view that? How do you view accountability, and how does the board?
I think we all feel like if parents need another choice, then there's a reason for that. And if they don't feel like they need another choice, then the market takes care of itself. As I said, I sent my children to Sebring High School because that's where I felt like they could get the best quality education in Highlands County. There's other parents who sent their students to Heartland Christian or to the other school in Avon Park because they felt like that's where they could get the best. If there's not enough parents who feel that choice is needed, then that choice won't succeed and the market will take care of itself. So I think we all feel like the more options, all of us on the board feel like the more options we give parents and students, the better off we'll be, and we'll let the market take care of it from there.
And Chair Tuck, I really appreciate you taking all this time to talk.
I'm honored to be able to talk to you guys.